They came to the road. It was sunken into the field, choked like the bed of a stream with mounded men. Armstead jumped down, saw a boy in front of him, kneeling, crying. A row of men crouched under the far bank, an officer yelling, pounding with the flat of his sword. There was a house to the right, smoke pouring from the roof, a great clog of men jammed behind the house. But men were moving across the road and up toward the ridge. There was a boy on his knees on the road edge, staring upward toward the ridge, unmoving. Armstead touched him on the shoulder, said, "Come on, boy, come on." The boy looked up with sick eyes, eyes soft and black like pieces of coal. Armstead said, "Come on, boy. What will you think of yourself tomorrow?" The boy did not move. Armstead told an officer nearby, "Move these people out." He climbed up the roadbank, over the gray rails on the far side, between two dead bodies. One a sergeant, face vaguely familiar, eyes open, very blue. Armstead stood high, trying to see. Kemper's men had come apart, drifting left. There was a mass ahead, but it did not seem to be moving. Up there the wall was a terrible thing, flame and smoke. He had to squint to look at it, kept his head down, looked left, saw Pettigrew's men still moving, but the neat lines were gone, growing confusion. The flags dropping, no rebel yell now, no more screams of victory. The men falling here and there like trees before an invisible axe. You could see them go, one by one and in clumps, suddenly, in among the columns of smoke from the shell. Far to the left he saw. Pettigrew's men were running. He saw a red flag streaming back to the rear. One of Pettigrew's brigades had broken on the far left. Armstead raised his sword, saw that the sword had gone through the hat, and the hat was now down near his hand. He put the hat up again, the sword point on a new place, started screaming, "Follow me! Follow me!" and began the long last walk toward the ridge. No need for hurry now. Too tired to run, expecting to be hit at any moment. Over on the right, no horse. Kemper was down. Impossible to live up there. Armstead moved on, expecting to die, but was not hit. He moved closer to the wall up there, past mounds of bodies, no line anymore, just men moving forward at different speeds, stopping to fire, stopping to die, drifting back like leaves blown from the fire ahead. Armstead thought, "We won't make it." He lifted the sword again, screaming, and moved on, closer, closer. But it was all coming apart. The whole world was dying. Armstead felt a blow in the thigh, stopped, looked down at blood on his right leg. But no pain. He could walk. He moved on. There was a horse coming down the ridge, great black horse with blood all over the chest, blood streaming through bubbly holes, blood on the saddle, dying eyes, smoke gray at the muzzle. Garnet's horse. Armstead held to watch the horse go by, tried to touch it. He looked for Garnet ahead. He might be afoot, might still be alive. But vision was mistier, much, much smoke. Closer now. He could see separate heads. He could see men firing over the wall. The charge had come to a halt. The attack had stopped. The men ahead were kneeling to fire at the blue men on the far side of the wall, firing at the gunners of the terrible cannon. Canister came down in floods, wiping bloody holes. A few flags tilted forward, but there was no motion. The men had stalled, unable to go on, still 30 yards from the wall and no visible halt, unable to advance, unwilling to run, a deadly paralysis. Armstead stopped, looked. Pettigrew's men were coming up on the left, not many, not enough. Here he had a few hundred. To the right, Kemper's brigade had broken, but some of the men still fired. Armstead paused for one long second. "It's impossible now. Cannot be done. We have failed, and it's all done. All those boys are dead. It's all done." And then he began to move forward automatically, instinctively, raising the black hat on the sword again, beginning to scream, "Virginians, with me! With me!"